Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends, coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of cultural awareness known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the bustling and always bodacious heart of our pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Brieflys, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. I think all of our listeners must have that pretty dialed in by now. Thank you for Brian. Hey, our Briefly panel includes our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, at least partially reformed Texan, and the longest serving Briefly is to my right, Truman O'Brien.
Yeah, here I am. I'm still pushing the big red button.
Okay, all right. Keep hands at the ready.
They're ready.
All right. Also, legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, and high fashion women's shoe salesman, Craig Bellis Esquire, is with us today on Zoom.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
He's coming through.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Good to have you here. Also, part-time political fairy fixer, affordable housing advocate, and full-time shenanigans coordinator is Amy Dreyer.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. We also have historian, professor, and perhaps now longing for the relative sanity of Australia and New Zealand, is Dr. Bruce Hallman.
Yes, they have actually figured a few things out down under, so it is attractive to think about.
I think the United States needs a new import.
Yes, right.
Or several.
Right. Without tariffs.
Good point. Well, I don't know. We might be willing to pay up for that.
That's right.
All right. We also welcome back to the Brown Briefly Professor Emeritus Llama Farmer and Rocker Dairy Dr. Larry Hubble.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here, Larry. And I myself, mariner, backpacker, rower, Kevin Jones, troublemaker is pretty much my brand and trade.
There you go.
So, hey, before we cover the news of the day in our usual lighthearted and passionately serious fashion, let's first check in with the Brieflys about how things are going. So, Truman, maybe you want to start us off.
Well, you know, we Craig and I in particular have been involved in home projects a lot. And This week, my home project was putting in a curtain drain in front of my garage and poured concrete. And by the way, I just have to tell you that there's this new concrete mixer that they have for rent. This thing, you hook the hose up to it and you put the dry concrete mix in the top in a hopper, and it automatically mixes the stuff and it extrudes it out of a pipe so that it mixes and you can adjust the water to get, you know, just to the right mix. Man, is it cool. That thing works great.
You could sell tickets.
You could, to watch it, just to watch it happen. So we poured almost a yard using that thing. It was pretty darn cool.
Nice.
But that's the good news. The bad news is that I let the concrete kind of form go under the form a little bit. And so yesterday I pulled the forms, had to use a tractor to get them out. They were really embedded in there. But they came out. I didn't break anything. So anyway, I feel pretty good about that.
This is what tractors are for.
Yeah. That's it. That was my week.
Awesome. Craig, were you helping with that activity Truman just described?
No? But we rented that same machine, and it is marvelous. It reminded me of my one of my father's first jobs was pouring gunite, where, you know, it's sort of mixed like that. And although this is a much more miniature version of it, but that's a fabulous thing. No, I started out on Wednesday saying goodbye to our executive director, Kate Dowling. We had a gathering. And by the way, a big happy birthday to you, Kate, today.
Oh,
it's Kate's birthday. Then went to the wonderful concert in the park on Thursday. The Cumbieros, great Latin music. And then I proceeded to end up flat on my back for the remaining days of the week and right through today. So I have to admit that finally discovered I had a mild case of COVID.
No.
First-time subscriber?
First-time subscriber.
Wow.
Last time.
They say it is making a reappearance. I think the headline I read said something like there's multiple different versions of the virus striving for supremacy. So
right.
Sounds like the administration.
Mm. Yeah.
Great.
So that basically has been my week. I feel better. And I think those 8 vaccination shots I've had kept it to a minimum.
Oh, excellent. Good advice. So may those vaccination shots continue.
Yeah, they're talking about, trying to outlaw them now, RFK and Trump.
Oh, is that right?
A
badge of honor. I've been vaccinated. Arrest me.
Yeah, exactly. No, they're talking about making them illegal. Mm-hmm. I just read that.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
Phenomenal.
Anyway. Okay.
So, okay. Well, back to our routine. Amy, how has your week been?
Good. I also went and saw the Cumbieros on Thursday, and it was great. And then Friday, super treat, Mick Kuhlman, gal mm-hmm. about town, artist about town, revived her Standing Nation, which is a one-woman show about our kinship with trees.
Oh.
And it's awesome. It's an hour long, and it's actually in the woods. Like, she... this one was in the Burton Woods, and, you know, she sort of has located a couple, you know, mother trees essentially on Vashon, which are, you know, sort of trees that are the ecological center of the forest. But she talks a lot about, you know, trees and their root systems and all the things that we forget about trees and all the things that we haven't known about trees. And it's really, really fantastic. It's just a great, amazing hour in the woods, and it's super educational and entertaining and inspirational. So that was really great. I think she's doing it again this weekend. I don't know if you know, I don't know how to get a hold of Mick, but just Google Standing Nation, our kinship with trees, and Mick Kuhlman. But it's great. Highly recommend it. And I think this one they're going to is in another location, and it's this 250-year-old Doug fir. Mm-hmm. I think that's really amazing. So that was awesome. That was a really, really excellent way to spend a Friday evening outside on Vashon.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's continue our journey around the table. And Bruce, how's things with you?
Oh, good week. This is week 7 of crabbing season. Next weekend is the last weekend. And so the catches are declining, as you would suspect, over a 2-month period. But still, like yesterday afternoon, we pulled up 6 big, giant Dungeness crab. And so it's sort of like, wow, they're still there.
Okay.
It's just getting fewer and farther between, but mm-hmm. still good. And one more week. Next weekend's the last weekend, so Sunday and Monday are crab days. And so September 1st, won't be able to crab again until next July.
Mm-hmm.
So had 2 of the older grandchildren come out to visit, Courtney, 24, and Ellie, 21. And so that was great. You know, we don't get to see them as much as often. They're sort of away, and both out of school, both working. And so it was nice to have them out for the weekend. And then Sunday was the museum's Virginia 5 cruise around the island. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you couldn't have asked for a more spectacular day. I mean, it just, you sat out on the deck, the sun was warm. You know, it felt like an air conditioner was blowing on you as the wind off the water came by. So it was just spectacular. And in the morning, we do a kids' cruise around Blake Island. We had about 40 kids and parents along, and that's always a kick. You know, it's just sort of get them out on the boat, get them to see how the engine works and all that kind of stuff. And then just a little plug for this Thursday, the last of the concerts in the park will be The Great Divide, which is this incredible 70s band from Vashon, Lawrence Sinner and a whole group of Vashon Islanders that made it kind of small big for a while in the 70s and 80s, but just incredible sort of band. And so that I suspect Ober Park will be jumping and
be
rocking, crowded.
You bet.
All right. Well, I was going to ask if you're feeling like empty nesters now. It sounds like not quite yet.
No. we still have 5 grandchildren, in 3 in the neighborhood, 2 in West Seattle, you know, 2 in Eastern Washington, and these mm-hmm. 2 older ones. So it's never a dull moment.
no risk. Awesome.
And by the way, just to follow up for you, Amy, Mick Coleman has got a website. It's M-I-K, Mick Coleman, K-U-H-L-M-A-N. And you can look her up. She is terrific, by
Excellent.
The way. I agree.
Yeah, go see the show. You'll love it.
All right. Our guest, Larry, how has your week been?
Well, it's been pretty good. However, like Craig, I just had COVID about 3 weeks ago. Mm. My second experience with it, fortunately. Paxlovid really works, and it was a pretty mild case. I have only one granddaughter, and she came from Japan, 2 weeks ago to visit us. She's only 13 years old, so came by herself, so it was nice seeing her. And really, over the past few months, I have been immersed in the early 20th century and the mid-20th century, focusing on the people who I will be presenting in a series of lectures in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Excellent. We will certainly be talking about that today. Are the llamas keeping cool in this weather?
The llamas do not like warm weather.
Uh-huh.
Now, when we lived in Wyoming, it was a little bit too cold there, but they do generally prefer cold. They got a lot of fleece on them, and it can make them uncomfortable. So my wife regularly sets up a sprinkler, and some of them just stand right over the sprinkler and cool off.
I can envision a llama like a car wash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The problem is then they often like to roll in the dirt, so they've got this got a wet fleece, and then the dirt just sticks onto them.
Llama mud.
How many llamas do you have?
You know, we came here with 14 11 years ago, and it was an older herd. So we're down to 4 now.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So it's always difficult for us when a llama passes.
Sure.
But they're doing well on Wax Orchard Road.
Yes, fantastic. All right. Well, hey, thanks for that. And let's see. I've been a little busy, having come off the water a couple weeks now, arranging a bunch of stuff. So, for example, on September 2nd, the Indivisible Vashon membership meeting at the United Methodist Church from 7 to 8:30 will feature Pramila Jayapal staffer. Kind of tell us, give us a little bit of insight into how things are going in Congress with our representative, one of my most favored representatives. Also, we presented a climate motion at the Vashon Mori Community Council because King County's updating their climate plan. Mm-hmm. And we just don't see enough Vashon in there. So we have several suggestions, of which our Congress member, Teresa Mosqueda, is actually acting on a number of them. But we have now a special meeting planned on the 3rd of September, 7 o'clock at the Land Trust building. Or if you go on the v-mcc.org website, you'll be able to look under events and see you can join by Zoom as well. So hope people will tune in for that to hear about climate plans and actions that could be more specifically directed at us here on Vashon Mori. Otherwise, I went out for a bike ride in the heat of the day the other day, yesterday. I was trying to get out of the house a little bit in the morning, but, you know, by 10:30, I actually got on the wheels. And I learned I still cannot ride the steep hills going north on the Burma Loop. So we'll still be working on that. Also, rowing this morning was spectacular. If you got up in the morning, you could see to the east the fantastic sunshine, and maybe a little bit of wildfire smoke is spicing things up, but it was religious almost with the way the sun shines was coming through, sort of like some of those movie scenes that you see. So spectacular. And the water was so flat, you could see it's mirrored in the water. And of course, we had a bunch of boats out today because spectacular day.
Yeah.
All right, hey, let's also check in to see what hope and inspiration we can conjure up from history. So on August 26th, famous things today, National Women's Equity Day in the U.S., which has not yet been outlawed, so let's hang in there for National Women's Equity Day. Mm-hmm. And also National Cherry Popsicle Day in the U.S.
Okay. Yeah. It's also National Dog Day.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's just hard to beat.
Yes, it is.
All right. Hey, women, dogs, and cherry popsicles. What better combo than that?
That's
great.
It.
Great.
No, you know, Molly and I this morning in our morning scramble show featured women because of Women's Equity Day. Mm-hmm. And that was from the 1920 passage of the 19th Amendment, right?
Yes.
But we also had a playlist about dogs, and we decided, you know, just not a good combination. So we're going to save the dog one for next
week. Women first.
We'll do that next week.
Every day is National Dog Day.
Yes,
come on.
Correct.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's I think that was a smart move, Truman, because most women know that all men are dogs.
There you go. Yeah.
I didn't know this gender assignment thing had been worked out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Also, historically today, speaking of women, in 1918, Katherine Johnson was born. She did pass away in 2020, but she was a NASA mathematician. Right. If you saw the movie Hidden Figures, you'll know that Katherine was the woman whose calculations were critical for the success of early American space flights, including the 1969 moon landing. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to Katherine. Also in 1920, we just mentioned the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing women the right to vote, formally adopted into the U.S. Constitution. Again, that year was 1920. And in 1968, the Chicago Democratic National Convention was besieged by demonstrators protesting the Vietnam War. Not one of those historical references, Larry, that you'll be talking about today, but maybe, you know, it's the series expands. Okay, all right. Were you there in 1968?
I was happened to be living in South Africa at the time.
Okay, so a little bit of distance. All right. Also in 2016, speaking of demonstrations, quarterback Colin Kaepernick remains seated during the playing of the national anthem. And taking a knee has a sort of a different connotation in this current time, but taking a knee sort of maybe definitely got more attention as Colin registered his concerns about life in America. All right. So with that perspective of civil rights, equal rights, and protest actions, and getting our country to move in a direction that we would all prefer, is our small talk guest, Dr. Larry Hubbell. And great to have you back, Larry, on the show one more time. If you could please remind our listeners about you, your global journey prior to arriving on Vashon. You already mentioned South Africa. And don't forget to include Leap and Larry in the homewreckers.
Okay. You know, I used to tell my students that I'm probably the only professor that they will have that was also a rock and roll star. So I got usually a few laughs. Although it's been a long time now since I've done that.
I'm glad you're setting the bar for other professors.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm a professor emeritus from Seattle University. I taught there for 10 years. And before that, I was at the University of Wyoming. I'm also a professor emeritus there for 25 years. I used to work in the federal government with an agency that no longer exists, ACTION, which used to run Peace Corps, VISTA, and the older American volunteer programs. Mm. And I was an innkeeper. And that was the period when I was Leaping Larry and my band was the Homewreckers.
Mm-hmm. love that. I just love that. And what was the name of your group, Bruce?
Bob's your uncle.
There you go. See, we have another professor who's a musician.
It could, yeah. I'm thinking that out of Morning Scramble, we got material. You just need to find it. Yeah.
We got a lead singer, you know, and we could do it.
Hey, anything's possible on Vashon, right? All right. Well, Craig, I think you also wanted to jump in and ask a question.
I have a fairly broad question. You know, the last time you were here, Larry, we talked about your lecture series, Authoritarian Rising. And I'm wondering what you were expecting then, which was prior to the presidential election, and now, in light of our president, the president, sending National Guard into L.A. and D.C., threatening Chicago, firing a dozen heads of national security agencies and the Federal Reserve, erasing history at the Smithsonian, investigating anyone who criticizes him, mm-hmm. suppressing the vote, on and on and on. What do you think?
Well, I think I'm probably a fairly poor predictor of who's going to win, because I really thought Kamala Harris was going to win. And my series on authoritarianism, actually, four of the lectures were prior to the election, and then we had a discussion section right after the election. People were very depressed. I guess I'm surprised by how much worse his second term seems to be than his first term. It's very disturbing. You listed many of the issues that he's been focusing on. You know, so let me go back to my past, and let me tell you that I lived in South Africa. I went to school in South Africa during apartheid, during the height of apartheid. And I was a senior in high school. And the hidden agenda of schools and really of the entire society was trying to induce conformity, which is exactly what Trump is doing, and ensure compliance with what authorities have to say. So, you know, it's very disturbing. Another thing that I guess I'll mention too, I was only there briefly, but I'm probably one of the few people you'll ever meet who've been to North Korea. And I was watching the cabinet meeting today, and it reminded me of the conformity that occurs in North Korea. And our dear leader is trying to enforce that. And how people are willing to subject themselves to humiliation, his cabinet members who have this blank look on their faces and are completely afraid to contradict him in any possible way. So I'm very disturbed by that. And I'm happy for groups like Indivisible, who are saying, we don't agree with that. We need to do things in a different way. We have to subscribe to the rule of law and our Constitution.
You know, I suppose you saw Governor Pritchard from Illinois in his speech. Man, I was like, holy cow, that's what we need.
More Democrats need to do that.
Yeah. Well, just more people. Forget Democrat, Republican. Just stand up for being who you are. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, and I just love what Gavin Newsom is doing. I mean, it's just holding up a mirror to the MAGA sort of right and just saying, look how ridiculous you look. And it's just driving them crazy. And it's sort of like, and it should.
Well, particularly because when they start to insult what Newsom's doing, right, it just reflects right back to the dear leader. So it's brilliant in that way.
Yeah, Fox News seems to be absolutely irate about it.
Yeah.
I just find it very hilarious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it does. I mean, it's kind of the only thing that works, right? Because, you know, Cory Booker did a great heroic thing and, you know, Pritzker doing his thing. But that never seems to stick. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't seem to stick. But this, what Newsom is doing, it's kind of sticky, and it's getting a reaction, right? So if you get a reaction, you know you're hitting home, right? So it's really interesting to see, and I've definitely seen the debate on the socials about there's plenty to say about Gavin Newsom that's not favorable. There's plenty to say that is favorable, but he is sort of a hero of the moment, right? And I think we all need that. We all need that sort of
uplift.
Yeah, that, you know, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whether they're the next presidential contender, it doesn't matter, right? It's an act of subversion that seems to be sticking.
Well, he got Trump to stop typing in all caps.
Right? Yeah.
That's a small victory, but it's a victory.
That is, we're all happy about that. Although, you know, now it makes the tweets seem less insane somehow. I don't know, right?
Wonder.
Right? Yeah, well, but, you know, speaking of heroes, right, and we sort of have these flashes of heroes, how did you get this idea for this next lecture series on political heroes? And what are you kind of hoping for out of this series?
Well, I've actually had a long interest in heroes. 36 years ago, when I wrote my dissertation, it was on heroes in the public service. So it's always been sort of, I've been ruminating about it for years. And secondly, I thought it was important because people seem to be people who love democracy seem to be fairly depressed with what's going on, considering the three branches of government are controlled by the Republicans, which I consider little more than a crime syndicate at this point. And then I chose these people because I really wanted to learn more about them. I actually used to work on the immediate staff of John Lewis. So I knew a fair amount about John Lewis, but I learned a lot more by reading his autobiography and another biography written on him. And what I'm hoping is that it will give people a sense of hope, because it's easy to lose hope at this point. And I think that this is probably the greatest threat to democracy in this country ever. But there are some parallels with what's happened in the past. And I'm going to draw on those parallels and how people, particular people, stood up and said, this is not right. We need to do something different. And then in addition to talking to the heroes, I'm also going to spend some time talking on their, I don't know what the plural of this is, their nemeses. Nemesis. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to focus on that too. I think, these people faced a lot of obstacles to be able to do what they had to do. And unlike politicians, especially in the Republican Party right now, they were interested in the common good as opposed to their own particular political interest. So again, I'm trying to provide people some hope.
All right. And I say, Craig, I think you wanted to put a comment in. Anything to say?
Well, I did, and you touched upon it, and it's the question of heroes generally are people who arise out of or in the face of potential ashes. But for the most part, you've got a society, because this is the way we deal with fear, is we lay low. And we try to and the more fear there is, the lower we lie. Mm-hmm. It's not until you get to sort of the breaking point where it's come home to you that you stand up. It's the rare individual who stands up for other people before it actually maybe even affects them.
So interesting, there's like maybe a permission structure thing now that has to happen.
And there's a real risk that these people face. Three of the four people that I'm discussing in my lectures were sent to prison. So this wasn't simply an armchair kind of philosophy that they were putting forward. They were actively participating in politics. Mm-hmm.
Let me jump on that and just sort of ask you a little bit about, you're planning to discuss four political heroes. So maybe you can take us through each of who those four are, what inspired you to select them. And before you get into that, maybe just touch on this concept. How do you define a hero? What is a hero? And how does that relate to Joseph Campbell's concepts of the hero's journey?
Yes. Well, the hero's journey is, there's a archetypal hero that, in fact, I made my dissertation on Hero with a Thousand Faces of Joseph Campbell. And one of the things that they face obstacles that they have to overcome. A lot of people who don't decide to choose that path just conform, and they think it makes life much easier for them. So they face that. They're also working for the common good. And one thing I found very interesting of these four, I don't know as much about one of my characters. There's not much information on them. But they were nice people. In addition to, there are some people who want to save humanity, but are not very gracious in dealing with other people. At least three of the four, and I suspect the fourth also, are just, very kind people. Eugene Debs, for example, he was he would frequently give money to people who needed it, sometimes clothing off his back. And, so he was just one example. And I know John Lewis was just, he was a pleasure to work for, a really nice guy, in addition to being an inspirational leader. Mm-hmm. Let's see, did I answer the question?
The other two.
Oh, okay, so I've got John Lewis, who we're starting off with. Mm-hmm. I'm also looking at Eleanor Roosevelt. You know, Eleanor Roosevelt was a very prolific writer, and she actually had a daily newspaper column. She could have very easily, she was from the upper class. She could have very easily ignored the ills of society. You know, she had a lot of problems in her life. She lost her two parents by the time she was 8 years old, and she lived with a grandmother who was extremely authoritarian. And yet she overcame that, and she also overcame her upper-class biases, which I think was very important. The third character, who I'm not as much information on, I'm trying to find as much as I can, Fred Korematsu. Fred was 23 years old when FDR decided to he issued Executive Order 90-9066, which moved Japanese American, most of whom were citizens, to concentration camps throughout the country. And he said, he was this 23-year-old guy, he was a welder. He was not an intellectual. And he simply said, I am not going to do this. I am not going to submit. So he actually, he changed his physical appearance, and he hid for a while, but they found him. And he was sent to these one of the concentration camps, but filed a case. Usually legal scholars consider this one of the worst decisions made by the Supreme Court. I think even John Roberts said that, believe it or not. It was called Korematsu versus United States, and he lost by a 6-3 vote, ironically. Two of the justices who voted to stand for his conviction to stand were Hugo Black and William Douglas, who were two of the pillars of the Warren Court later. And interesting, Earl Warren was instrumental in having the Japanese be relocated. Hmm. He was the Attorney General of the state of California, and one of the things he did to provide information and justification for why for having the Japanese relocated was he developed maps about where Japanese lived in California. Hmm. And he found that a lot of them lived along major arteries. And his conclusion was, well, you know, they did that purposely to assist the Japanese when they did an invasion of the United States. It turns out that probably the primary reason why they were there was that they were discriminated against for owning more valuable properties. And then finally, the last character who I've mentioned briefly is Eugene Debs, who was a presidential candidate 5 times on the Socialist Party ticket. The last time he ran for office, he ran from office from prison. And he had been imprisoned by his nemesis, well, and other people, Woodrow Wilson, who was actually quite an authoritarian. I mean, he was a racist. He was misogynist. He opposed the amendment. I always forget if it's 18th or
19th. 19th.
19th. 19th. Yeah. He posted the 19th Amendment to the very end. And Eugene Debs went to prison. He was sentenced to a 10-year term for basically his statements in front of a crowd in one of his speeches weren't particularly inflammatory. He was basically urging men not to enlist in the military during World War I. And that was reason enough, according to the Espionage Act, to imprison him. He eventually gets out. He gets pardoned by, of all people, Warren Harding, after spending about 2 years in prison. So three of the four, the only one who didn't end up in prison was Eleanor Roosevelt. John Lewis was arrested and imprisoned 40 times.
So, let me follow up with that, with this concept of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Because in Campbell's sort of conceptualization, every hero is called, but you know, but they don't sort of seek out to right. be heroes. Do you find that with these four?
Yes, I think they were all somewhat reluctant. I mean, they were being pulled different ways. In some cases, their family didn't like what they were doing. In all cases, basically, they took a position that society generally did not like what they were doing. So, you know, they faced a lot of internal issues that they had to deal with. I think they're all pretty reflective people. And also the external environment, which was not friendly towards them.
All right, so you've got these four that you're following that you have. So who do you want to see in the future? What story, what hero story do you want to read about in the future of...
Well, I don't know if it's heroic, but I've been thinking about this a lot.
Yeah.
And I would like, now there have been a few people in the Republican Party who have stood up and they lost their jobs as a result of it against Trump. And as I said previously, I feel like the Republican Party has basically become a crime syndicate and not a political party. I guess what I'd like to see is more Republicans stepping forward and saying, I don't agree with what you want. And also, especially those Republicans in the legislative branch who have been just rubber stamps to virtually everything that Trump has advocated. So I'd like to see the Republican Party become a real party again.
Hallelujah. I think we can all agree with that one.
Well, I mean, I think to me, Republican Party is just what they've always been, and we've just taken off the mask. I mean, this is what the Republican Party has always wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Is women not voting, black folks not voting, right? It is that post-slavery, right? There had to be somewhere post-slavery for people to go who were upset about the new world order. And to me, that's just been the Republican Party since slavery.
And it's interesting to put that in historical context because the Republican Party was the party of Lincoln. You know, and the Republican Party was the party that put through the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment in the 1860s and 1870s. And it wasn't until the 20th century, you know, that sort of the Democratic Party, which was the party of the South, the party of the Confederacy, you know, with the FDR Revolution, essentially, in the 30s, sort of flips itself. And the Republicans, in response, flip themselves to being sort of oppositional to that sort of 1930s sort of social consciousness. Yeah. So it's interesting to see how, you know, political parties have these sort of glacial movements. And, you know, 50 years from now, are the Republicans going to be the screaming liberals? You just have to wonder.
Or will they exist?
Yeah.
Well, I remember that history that you mentioned too, Amy, you know, the misogyny, the racism, and finding a foothold for that and then propelling, you know, keeping that flame alive through all of the rhetoric, all the propaganda. Well, it's a
kind of the Tea Party is the one who really, you know, brought that to the front.
Well, I feel like they just sort of, again, they took the mask off, right? Because to me, the economic policies that the Republican Party sort of promoted were economic policies that were structurally designed to keep women, people of color, right? Like the economic policies were just sort of a genteel way of structurally, you know, redlining on a massive basis, essentially, right? And then they just sort of got this, you know, they figured out, hey, we can get a lot more voters if we start whipping up this populism kind of thing. And it just, you know, it kind of just spun out of control, I don't know, or it spun to its, and to me, to its intended conclusion.
Well, when the Republicans win, they tend to win on cultural issues, getting people all hepped up about flag burning or hippies or blacks,
Mr. Potato
or whatever. Yeah, there's all kinds of these emotional issues, which is what Trump is a master at exploiting. My point is that if people voted on purely economic issues, they would probably get about 5 to 10% of the vote, because they're, as we all know, their policies are clearly aimed at enriching the rich.
Well, for your future story that you mentioned, all I say is remember Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. As maybe examples of those types of folks.
As someone who lived in Wyoming for 25 years, I could tell you, I was shocked. Now, she wasn't representative, and I was there, but we were very familiar with Dick Cheney. And I've worked with Republican Party leaders because we were the only university in Wyoming. I was absolutely floored when she took a stand. Mm. And, of course, what happened to her? She lost her leadership position, and then she lost her job.
Well, what's amazing to me is that here it was this staunch conservative Republican, and now the Republican Party is just down on her like, you know, I thought, well, what happened? What happened to your loyalty to this person who was your, you know, was a firebrand for your cause? And now suddenly she's, you know, person non grata. I mean, what the heck?
Well, they're not, because they're not interested in the right thing. I mean, this is, to me, and again, here we are, a gentle persuasion, right? But to get a little, you know, spicy about it, to me, you know, she did the horrible thing of unmasking what the Republican Party has always been trying to do. It's not about the right thing or the wrong thing. It's about money and power in the hands of the people who quote unquote deserve it, which are straight white men, right? That's to me. So anybody who goes against that gets kicked out of the Republican Party. How dare you, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm also curious if Liz Cheney, how much of that Blackwater money and, you know, money she's sitting on from the Iraq War, yeah. right? Like, before I consider her a hero, I'm gonna be like, how much of your family's ill-gotten gains have you disowned, Liz Cheney, you know? And so, or when, yeah, I, you know, I can get spicy.
So, Amy, so what hero are you going to be looking for?
I'm excited to get a little glimpse of history because the Democrats, we really are paddling around, you know, and we're doing that thing where we eat our own, you know. I got my things to think about Gavin Newsom, but, you know, good for him. He's doing that. But, man, we just get the circular firing squad going as soon as somebody, you know, seems to dare to not submit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Craig, how about you? Who's your hero?
Well, you know, it's hard to be a prophet, but I tell you what I would like. I'd love to see one of the right members of the Supreme Court finally say, oh, that's crossing the Rubicon. That is a step too far.
Yeah.
I want to see more of, I'd love to see somebody emerge in that regard. I also would like to, I'm also very curious to see how Pete Buttigieg's career continues, being a gay man, being extraordinarily intelligent and articulate, and see whether or not he can survive and continue to have an influence for the next 30 years.
Yeah, John Roberts may be your guy, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. You think?
We'll see.
He's in a leadership role, so maybe,
that's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Bruce, did you have a future hero come to mind?
Well, like Craig, I mean, it's hard to predict the future and hard to put your money on which horse is going to win. But I just think the things that are happening with some of the Democratic politicians who are starting to step up. I mean, Pritzker's speech, you know, yesterday, the day before. We just need more politicians right across the board. The governor of Maryland, if you saw him this weekend, I mean, just took it head on. What Newsom's doing is sort of fighting fire with fire. And that's what it takes. You know, I'm waiting to see some of the women Democratic leaders step up and take that same kind of sort of aggressive sort of approach. You know, and they're there. You know, the Elizabeth Warrens, you know, the Amy Klobuchers, the, you know, Gretchen Whitmers. I mean, it's not like there's not a lot of candidates out there who have the heft and the ability to do it. It's just it comes back to that concept of sort of what Kennedy did in the 1950s with his book Profiles in Courage. It's just that sort of like, what does it take to step up and sort of become that courageous hero, if you will, what Larry's going to be talking about. And it takes that sort of moving beyond the self. And that's difficult for politicians in this particular time because they're so dependent on media support.
So, Larry, that brings to the point, what do you use to define that hero quality? I mean, what is it that that comes to mind when you think about that?
Well, I think about the heroic archetype that Joseph Campbell wrote about in The Hero with a Thousand Faces, a person who works for the common good, mm-hmm. who is not going to conform, is going to go their own way, and who overcomes variety of personal obstacles. I mean, one of the obstacles that I think at least three of those four people that I'm talking about had was they were all introverts. Mm-hmm. And it was a little mm-hmm. difficult for them to, they were all good public speakers, but they had to, that wasn't something that came naturally to them. Mm-hmm.
I want to follow up on Bruce's comments and sort of, talk about some, my question is Jasmine Crockett the next Ann Richards? Mm. I would just love to see her light Texas on fire and go to town on it. And, I do think about Jasmine Crockett and Muriel Bowser, right? Like some of these women who are kind of stepping up and, oddly enough, I don't think her social media team was as good, but Patty Murray's been kind of doing this Trump thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. She's been kind of, but it's the right text or it's the right tweet at the right moment with the right team. And but I also, if you want something done, ask a woman. If you want something said, ask a man is kind of, how I'm picking up on some of the coverage that's coming around. And, there's enough. I've read a really interesting take on the Democratic Party and the interests of consolidating power in the hands of straight white men in the Democratic Party as well. Right. It is 100% there and present there and would be remiss not to, sort of recognize that it is pervasive across sort of party lines. But yeah, who is that hero? We're waiting for them to step forward.
I think you could say that the Democratic Party has a very strong bench and that there are a lot of people who could be very good candidates to be the next nominee for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one interesting thing about this response to what future hero story do you want to hear about? We've sort of identified people associated with these sort of columns that support our society, the Supreme Court, politicians. What comes to mind for me is the military. Mattis is gone, but Mattis did a lot of the right things in standing up and saying, no, we will not be a pawn of an administration to turn our forces against our own people. And we need another military voice like that. I hope we read that story.
That's interesting you bring that up. My brother-in-law is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, Vietnam vet. And, just a conversation we had this weekend, he was just bemoaning the fact that what he's seeing going on in the military right now is very similar to what went on in Russia in the 1930s with the purge of the generals. Mm-hmm. Stalin came in and just sort of purged the military to get rid of any opposition. And he says that's essentially what he sees happening right now is all those general officers and colonels and 3, 4, 5-star generals, they're being pushed aside. And what they're being replaced with is sort of loyalist lackeys. And, man, it's scary. He is very, very worried. As a military guy, right, he said he's never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I recently sent there was a person, a woman on Facebook who had lived in Germany, and she gave kind of a historical report of what happened in Germany and exactly how it went. And I sent that to one of my Montana buddies. And he wrote back saying, oh, Facebook, it's fake book, And I said, I agree. There's a lot of fake stuff on Facebook. But go read the history, man. Mm-hmm. Don't blame the narrator. Mm-hmm. Go look at history and see what actually happened. Mm-hmm. And these guys, he said, and if you really think it's that bad, you ought to just leave the country. Mm-hmm. It's like,
love it or leave it.
Yeah. Right. Come on, man.
Oh, yes. Well, Larry, this series that we've been talking about, there's a new name for it, right? Finding Courage in Dark Times, mm-hmm. Public Sector Heroes Rediscovered. And can you tell us a little bit about how people can find out where and when and some of the logistics details?
Yes. And let me say that this is being sponsored by Indivisible, and we hope that as a result of these lectures, that people will donate money to Indivisible and also possibly volunteer. Yeah, it's going to occur, we think, at the Vashon High School. The first lecture will be on John Lewis and Sheriff Jim Clark, who is the sheriff of Selma, Alabama. And that will be on September 30th. The second lecture, there are every 2 weeks. The second lecture will be October 14th, and that will be on Eugene Debs and Woodrow Wilson. And the third lecture will be on October 28th, and that will be focused on Fred Korematsu and Earl Warren. And the final lecture, which is on Veterans Day, these are everyone's at a two-week break, will be on, let's see, always forget. Oh, yeah. Eleanor Roosevelt and Joseph McCarthy.
Mm.
Interesting thing, by the way, let me just leave with this thing about Joe McCarthy, is that there's a direct line between McCarthy and Trump.
Mm-hmm.
His principal aide during the McCarthy Army hearings was Roy Cohn.
Yeah.
And Roy Cohn was then mentored Donald Trump. And in fact, there's some interesting similarities between McCarthy and Trump. One is a very, basic one. They often talk about themselves in the third person. We know Trump does that. So did McCarthy. And also very much focused on conspiracy theories.
Yes. You know, the one thing that gives me hope in all of this is that I don't think Trump is smart enough to pull this off. And the only thing that frightens me about it is people like Stephen Miller are really smart and snakes, man. I mean, absolute snakes. And they, I think, can have an influence on Trump.
Of course, I think there's different kinds of smartness.
Yeah.
And I think he's very smart in terms of being like a jungle fighter. He knows how to go for the jugular, and he knows how to humiliate people. But in terms of, conceiving a plan, it doesn't seem to be there at all to our benefit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, reactive, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of people stepping up and being heroes, thank you, Indivisible. Vashon is sort of very supportive of this work that you're doing, so we look forward to bringing this series forward. The Indivisible Vashon website also, right at the top of the homepage, has the next protest action. So September 1st is Labor Day, and it's going to be a big, big event for people to, stand up and let their voices be heard. I think, as Pramila says, courage is contagious, and that's one way to catch the bug, is to go out with others and participate.
Are all of these at the high school?
Yes.
Okay, and it's going to be in the auditorium, I
yes.
assume?
Okay.
High school theater, actually.
Oh, theater?
Yeah.
I've never been in the high school, so.
Oh, you're going to love it. Oh, the theater is excellent. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going big. I'm told by the authorities that we have the theater booked, and we're working on all the logistics of the insurance coverage and so on and so on. So keep your eyes open on social media, Indivisible Vashon's Facebook and Blue Sky, as well as the website and posters around town. Here on Voice of Vashon, you're going to hear about this again.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, attend those things and see how others have addressed this challenge that we currently face and the parallels, right? There's a lot of parallels between what we're seeing now and what people have done then and maybe what we can do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and while we're speaking of democracy, our own Mr. Craig Bellis here on September 24th is going to be moderating a community forum with all of our state elected officials with our delegation. So we'll have Fitzgibbon there, and Emily Alvarado and Brianna Thomas will be coming to VCA. 5:30 to 7:30, gather around 5:30, and we kick it off promptly at 6:00. So we get our full hour and a half, but Craig's going to moderate, and we'll have community questions. We have a great coalition of folks from organizations from the community coming together. So come with your questions for our state legislators, your Vashon questions our state legislators.
And Brianna Thomas is appointed, and so I don't know how many Vashon Islanders, Amore Islanders, have really had a chance chance to interact with her.
Yeah, no, so, she's running. She'll be on your ballot, so this is your chance to meet her. She is definitely cut from the same cloth as Teresa Mosqueda and Emily Alvarado, for sure. She's out there. She's whipping, so get to meet her.
And Emily has been on board for 2 or 3 sessions.
Yeah, so she moved up to senator, right?
That's right, yes,
and yeah, so senator she was, Wayne. I think she was in her second cycle as a representative and then moved up to senator.
Yeah, so of course, Fitzgibbon's been with us for a long time. Eileen Cody, right, also a representative. But those are fairly new people now. So yeah, show up and see who's representing us.
And we need to start paying attention to the executive race. Gourmet and Balducci, it's going to be close. Depending on what cut you read on the primary results, it's going to be an interesting race. So tune in to that as well. I think I'm just going to put one of the, this is my favorite. You know what we should do? You know what Vashon ought to do is have a candidate forum with the executives. I think that would be really, really interesting. So just make that someone else's job.
But, what I find interesting in that King County executive race is they're both really good people. I mean, you know, they're both very progressive. You know, they certainly have their differences, but we're not going to lose either one. But it's well worth getting to know both candidates and where they stand on the issues. And a candidate forum is always a great way to do that.
Well, speaking of upcoming elections, I'll throw one more topic out there before we close today. The gerrymander wars of 2025 have started. It looks, I'm not sure when the Texas Senate is going to vote, but certainly Governor Abbott is going to sign into law.
They already voted.
They did vote. Right. Okay, so it's a done deal now, basically.
Come on, right. California.
California.
Let's go. Let's get crazy with
all right,
this.
So,
let's do
you
it.
Know,
bust
could,
it open.
What could go wrong? It's, you know, I asked whether this was legal. I think that the Supreme Court would say in their eyes that it is. Is this the path to restoring American democracy? What do we see at the end of this, you know, rising arms war that we have in our politics? Any thoughts? How's it going to end?
Well, it's nothing new. I mean, Larry, you know that. I mean, gerrymandering has been around ever since, you know, the country was formed. And it's just a matter of who demonizes it the most at any particular time. But my sense is, you know, it's... The gerrymandering isn't what really counts. I mean, it makes a difference. But what happens on the national scene, what people do in the voting booth, I think we will see some dramatic changes in the next. This sort of in a fall election even, there'll be some great signals. But 2026 midterm election, big time.
You know what, though? I agree with Larry. I did not expect that last election to go like it did. And now we're expecting the next election to go basically like we thought that one would. So I'm not positive. I'm not convinced myself.
You haven't lost your Social Security yet.
Yeah,
not yet.
Right?
Not yet.
I'm with Newsom, though. Do not comply. Radical non-compliance. Yeah. I like that.
Craig.
Yeah, unfortunately, I see the gerrymandering thing going in the same direction as we've gone with our the Senate. We started out with a fairly representative government, but now we have things carved up. You've got the whole issue of hugely populated states that have two senators and very unpopulated states that have two senators.
Yeah.
You add gerrymandering to that, makes it worse and worse. I think we're losing the one person, one vote with that movement.
Maybe the only silver lining in all of this is when you think about statewide offices, governors, attorney general, secretary of state, that gerrymandering of those districts will not affect those people.
No.
So if you're looking to regain progressive control of the government, that is certainly a place. Well, let's see. Next week, Truman, I think you're hosting the show. Tell us what's up.
I'm really excited. We're going to have Emily Burns is going to be back with us. If you remember, Emily was with us last year when she was talking about the stupid bike night, which, by the way, is the 6th, Friday the 6th this time. But she is the Waterfront Asset Management Program Manager. Which is kind of a big deal. And she's going to be here talking about the grand opening of the new waterfront in Seattle, which, by the way, if you haven't been down there, is spectacular.
Wonderful.
So I'm really excited to have her on and talking about that.
All right. So a joy to be together with the Briefleys. Larry, thank you for joining us again.
It's
really inspired by this lecture series coming up. For Larry Truman, Bruce, Craig, and Amy, I am Kevin. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week on the Brown Briefly.